what I say I believe to be one of the most difficult parshiyot in Torah. We will learn the psukim, and then we'll just try and do the very best we can. It's the problem of the vow that was made by Yiftach. That's what we were up to. In Shoftim, chapter 11, we can begin with Pasuk 29. Let's read again quickly from Pasuk 29. Chapter 11. Vatehi al Yiftach Ruach Hashem, the Spirit of God came upon Yiftach. Vayavar atak Gilad et Menashe, and he crossed through all of Gilad and Menashe. Vayavar, and he passed Mitzvei Gilad. In other words, the struggle has begun in the territory of Gilad on Jewish land. But Yiftach, with the Spirit of God that comes upon him, he brings the battle into the home of the enemy. Mitzvei Gilad avar b'nei Amon, from Mitzvei Gilad he crosses over into the land of b'nei Amon. He brings the fight home to them. Yiftach nedel Hashem vayomar. Yiftach made a vow to God, saying, "Im naton titein et ha'amon b'nei Amon b'yadi, if you will give b'nei Amon into my hands, and it shall come to pass hayotzei v'hayah hayotzei asher yotzei midaltei beiti l'krati b'shuvi b'shalom b'nei Amon." The one who's going to come out of my house when I return home in peace from B'nai Amon, Hoyol Hashem, that will be to God, v'halitu olan, I will bring it as a burnt offering. Alright, here is the faithful neder, the vow that he has made. Vayavo Yiftach B'nai Amon, Yiftach crossed over to B'nai Amon, lilochein bom, to wage war with them, v'yitnei Hashem b'yado, God gave them into his hands. And he smote them, from Aroer until the approaches to Minit, 20 cities, Ab, a place called Avel Kramim, Makaget Olamiot, by Yikonu B'nei Amon, B'nei B'nei Son, the sons of Amon were humbled, brought down on before the children of Israel. And here it is, the great victory. We're talking about 18 years. 18 years the Jews had suffered under Amon. And Yiftach is the instrument of God to bring the great salvation. Vayavu Yiftach ha-Mitzvah. Yiftach came to Mitzvah, to his house. V'hinei bito yotzeit l'krato. His daughter is coming out toward him. V'tupim u'b'mecholot. Just imagine the scene. She's coming out full of joy with drums and cymbals and... Ah! Vei v'rakhi yichida. She is the only one he has. Ein lo mimenu ben u'bat. Even from her he has no son or no daughter, it's a single one and only daughter. He sees her and he looks like the Likud after the Midgam HaTelevizia was announced. Fartik. It's devastating. Devastating. When he saw her, he tore his garments and he said, "Vei ahobiti hachreya hichra. You have brought me down. You have made things so difficult for me. I had opened up my mouth to God. I can't go back on what I said." Listen to that. Remember that. She said, "Ovi, my father, you opened up your mouth to God. Do to me what you said from your mouth. Since God gave you revenge from the hands of Bnei Amon, do to me what it is that you want to do." She said to her father, "Let it be done to me. Leave me be for 2 months. And I will go down upon the mountains. I will cry for my virginity. Anochi I v'reotai, my friends." Yom, and he said, "Lechi, go." Yishlachot tashnei chadashim. He sent her away for 2 months. Vatelechi v'reyota. She and her friends went. Vatevk al betuleha al hehadim, and she cried for her virginity, her youth, upon the mountains. Vayimikach shnayim chadashim. It came to pass at the end of 2 months. Vatoshev alaviyah. She returned to her father. Vayaaslo et nidra shenada. He did to her the vow that he had vowed. V'hilo yada ish. She never knew a man, but the chok be Israel. This was a law in Israel. Very mysterious, very mysterious. What did he do? What did he do to her? And what kind of a chok? What kind of a chok? Alright, the simple thing, of course, Rashi says, it was a law, became a law in Israel that no man should ever again do anything of the sort. No man should be careful of what it is that he said. In Miyolim Miyamima Telachta Benot Yisrael, from year to year, the daughters of Israel would go to Tanod Bat Yiftach HaGiladi to mourn over the daughter of Yiftach HaGiladi, Arbak Yarim Bashanah, 4 days during the course of the year. The entire parasha of Yiftach is going to end by the 7th pasuk in the next parak. There are going to be another 7 psukim. You know what? In order to fully understand and grasp what has happened over here, we'll have to read through those 7 psukim. Let's go. By Yitzhak Yishafrayim. And we had learned them before, but we have to refresh our memories. The people of Ephraim gathered by Yavor Tzafonah. The people of Ephraim went northward by Yomru Yiftach. They met up with Yiftach and they said to him, Adu avartu lilachem b'nei Ammon, why did you cross over to wage war with the sons of Ammon? V'lonu lo karata lalechet imach. You didn't call us to go with you. You will recall, of course, Gidon had the same problem with the people of Ephraim. They also came to complain, why is it that you went out to war without calling unto us? And they had joined the war toward the end. They were the ones who captured the officers of Amalek and Aram, Zevah and Salmuna, and he, that is, Gidon succeeded in appeasing the people of Ephraim. And he told them that what you've done now toward the end of the war is even greater than everything that I did during the course of the war. And they were appeased. Yiftach does not succeed in appeasing them, and it's going to cause terrible loss of life by Klal Yisrael. What did they say to him? Do you hear how they talk to the Shofet? We're going to burn down your house with you. Yiftach said to them, there had been a terrible struggle between my people and the people of Bnei Ammon. And I called to you, I cried out to you. You didn't come to help me. Now you come. When I needed you, you didn't come. I saw that you're not going to help. And I put my life in my hands. And I crossed over to wait for the Ammon. And God gave them into my hands. Why did you come up against me today to wage war with me? What do you want? I called you. You didn't come. I think if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time that Jew is waging war against Jew. Civil war, we're talking about civil war. Remember, not with ballots, but with bullets. This is not a verbal altercation. We're talking about Jews who are going out to fight one another. So Yiftach the Kolam Shei Gilad, he gathered all the people of Gilad, Vayilachem at Ephraim, he waged war with Ephraim, Vayaku Anshei Gilad at Ephraim, and the people of Gilad smote Ephraim. Ki Amru, the people of Gilad had always felt as though they were second class citizens in the eyes of Ephraim. Ephraim had referred to them as Plitei Ephraim, you're the leftovers, the remnants of Ephraim. Ephraim saw themselves as the elite of the Jewish people, and these fellows, first of all, from Gilad, and second of all, they live on the other side of the Yarden, the other side of the tracks. These are the people who are the less significant and the less important. Yes? So let me finish a few.
Alright.
Atem, Plitei Ephraim, Atem. You are like the remnants of Ephraim, Gilad, betoch Ephraim, betoch Menashe. The Gilad that is in the midst of Ephraim or the midst of Menashe is really there. They're unimportant, they're insignificant. Gilad captured the bridges of the Jordan that lead to Ephraim. That is because the battle is taking place on the east bank of the Jordan. Now Ephraim is being beaten by Yiftach's forces, so they're now retreating in order to make their way back home across the Jordan. When the remnants, those who fled from Ephraim, those who fled from the field of battle, they came to cross the Jordan, the people of Gilead would say to them, they were holding the bridges, the people of Gilead. Ha Ephrati ata? Are you from Ephraim? Are you in Ephrati? Vayomer, of course, what would the response be? No, I'm not there. Vayomer lo, so they would say to him, Emorno Shibolet, say the word Shibolet, Vayomer, and he said, Sibolet. The Lo Yachin Ladabe came because they were not able to sound a shin well. It was a sin, like a Litvish sin. They grabbed him, whoever it was, and they slaughtered him over the bridges of the Yarden. 42,000 men fell in battle that day. 42,000 men. This was a tragedy. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first battle between Jews. Terrible tragedy. The people of Ephraim had an exaggerated view of themselves, and listen, these are the terrible things that happen when people simply are blinded either by their own importance or their own view of themselves, and these are tragic things. This is a tragedy. And I'm sure that what has to be done after a tragedy of this sort is lahasik et hamaskanot, or one has to be minateach, the anatomy of a tragedy. And over here, we're going to see also that there is a relationship between the tragedy of Klal Yisrael and the personal tragedy of Yiftach. That's why I wanted to finish learning these psukim. There is a relationship between... Well, they were from the other side of the Yarden, so it was Reuven, Gad. Those were the tribes that were on the other side. Let's finish the parsha of Yiftach. Yishtok Yiftach et Yisrael, Sheish Shanim. Yiftach judged Israel for 6 years. Vayomach Yiftach HaGiladi. And Yiftach HaGiladi died by Yikaver Ba'arei Gilad, and he was buried in the cities of Gilad. All right. So we already did mention a number of the Medrashim. I will only remind you of them. Yiftach had said something that he shouldn't have said. He opened up his mouth and he said something he shouldn't have said. We have to look at it, first of all, from the point of view, was what he said binding? Was the vow a real vow? No, was it a real vow in the sense that he had to keep it? Did he have to keep it or didn't he have to keep it? And the next question is going to be, what indeed did he do to her? It doesn't seem to be terribly clear from the Pesukim what he did to his daughter. Whatever it is, it all ends up as a tragedy. Why wasn't somebody able to save the situation? Why wasn't there somebody who could do something about it? All right. As far as the vow itself is concerned, if he would have gone to ask a shayla, he would have been told, no problem, no problem. There's a machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says that if a person makes a vow of this sort, the most that he's obligated to do is pay one's value. He would have had to give the value of his daughter. And in Parashat Chukotai, we have a whole list of standardized values according to age and sex. He would have had to pay, I don't know, 30 shekel, 40 shekel. That's it. According to Rish Lakish, he wouldn't even have had to pay any money. Why? Because when a person says that something should be an olah, it should be a fire offering, it's valid only if the thing is something, the object is something that you can make into a fire offering. Human beings are not fire offerings. The same thing would have been if a dog or a camel walked out of his house. So in other words, from the point of view of halacha, it's quite clear that at most he would have had to pay 40, 50 shekel. At most. And so why didn't he ask a shayla? Why doesn't he ask a shayla? And even if he has a further difficulty with it, so go ahead and be mater neder. I mean, we do it every year before Rosh Hashanah. You sit down with three good Jews and you tell them, listen, if I made any vows, I want to be freed from the vows. And they said, mutalacha, 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 and that's it, it's all over. So the last thing that we talked about 2 weeks ago was, is that the Chazal, our rabbis, also find that there was another great man during the course of that generation, and that was Pinchas. Pinchas was the Kohen Gadol. Pinchas, ben Elazar, ben Aaron, HaKohen. And here, of course, Chazal tell us that Yiftach had a responsibility to go to Pinchas and ask a shaila, or Pinchas would have had the responsibility to go ahead and go talk to Yiftach in order to resolve this issue that a Jewish girl should not be caught in a terrible situation of this sort. Says the Medrash, shouldn't Yiftach have gone to Pinchas? So Yiftach said, listen, Ani Rosh V'Katzin LiYisrael, I am the head and the officer of Israel. Eilech Eitzel Pinchas, I should go to Pinchas. It doesn't mean that he really had to say it. It doesn't mean that he ever had to express it that way, but what it means is there is a sense of pride and conceit on some level that is operating over here. Remember, we're talking about people who are gedolei olam. We're talking about great people. We're not talking about people from the street. Remember, this is a tata and an only daughter. And wouldn't a father under normal circumstances give up everything for a daughter? And what's he asked to give up? To go to Pinchas and ask Pinchas a shayla. So when our rabbis say that the Yiftach said, I should go to Pinchas, it means that on some very, very sensitive, low-key level that he wasn't even aware of consciously, there was some sense of pride or conceit that was working on him. I don't believe at all that Chazal said that Yiftach sits over there and he says, no, listen, if my daughter has to be brought as an olah, well, I should save her by going to Pinchas. Obviously, that's not what took place over here. It means that pride and conceit are the kind of character flaws that flaw one's thinking. And it may be very subtle. The person who is suffering from the flaw is not even aware of it. You would tell Yiftach, what is with you? You're letting your pride get in your way. You're bringing tragedy down upon yourself and your daughter because of your pride. He wouldn't even know what you're talking about. What me pride? But Chazal, who look at it with greater depth, they know that on some level it's operating. And on the level that it's operating, it's blinding him. He doesn't really see things correctly. On the other hand, Chazal also tells us, Pinchas said, Ani Kohen Gadol, I am the high priest, I should go to that Am Haaretz over there, Yiftach. I'm sure he didn't say it, but on some level, no, it's operating. And we never know, even in ourselves, we never know. On what level is it that, you know, I my little pride, my little conceit, and it blinds us.
I think the children just didn't get on personality-wise. And that can happen between
great robots today. You're right, except that I tell you, if it would be my one and only daughter whose fate hangs in the balance, I would prostrate myself before somebody whom I despise. If I'd have to cut a deal with Rabin, I'd cut a deal with Rabin. If they don't get together, it's because there are character and personality flaws over here that they're not really aware of. But wait a minute, that's not going to be enough. I know that what I just said is not really enough to answer this, because the question that I've asked is even better. What do you mean? Your personality gets in the way from saving your daughter. What? A father would give his life for an only daughter. Give anything. Give anything means even sacrifice his pride on the altar of his daughter. So we have to go further. That's a very good question. If Pinchas and Yiftach have been blinded, what about the Sanhedrin? What about Gedolei Yisrael? What about Talmidei Chachamim? Why isn't there somebody that walks over them and says, Yiftach, what are you talking about? You don't got a problem.
Any little bicycle that learned the Sech and the Dome, learned the Pasach Chumash, is able to go over to Yiftach and tell him Yiftach. You don't have a problem. According to Rabbi Yochanan, so you give 50 shekel. According to Rish Lakish, you don't have to do anything. What, you have a problem? We'll be matanedah for you. There's a blindness and a darkness over here that descends upon all Gedolei Yisrael. There's something tragic. Why? That's where we're getting to the point. Yes?
I'm sure that there was a Mrs. Yiftach, but I don't know. I don't know.
Listen to a number of other medrashim. We're going to build up the case. The Tanit Ve'elio says Zen Nohei Gedula Ba'atzmo. The Zen Nohei Gedula Ba'atzmo. This is following in line with the previous medrash that we learned. Each one conducted himself with a sense of importance. Oila legedula shekovedet ed ba'aleha. Woe is it to greatness that it buries those who have it. That's why I say a little bit of time out in the exile of opposition is a very good, and as Sandy says, a sobering experience. Gedula is kovedet ed ba'aleha. Greatness buries those who have it. Oila legedula. But listen to Chazal. Woe is to greatness. Shela olam eino goremet tova. It never brings any good. That's a tonne de vei Eliyahu perek yud aleph. Just trust me. Trust me. Rav Gold liyamincha. Don't worry. Mi ben shnehem. Another medrash. And this is a medrash bereshit rabba. Perek samach. Section gimel. Section Gimel. That was, I'm just telling you the number of the section. It's not a political statement. The Bereishis Rabba says me ben shnehem, between the two of them, of the Hanarahi, that girl was lost between the two of them. Zema shalmim habriyot, that's what the people say. Ben hamiyaledet v'hayoledet holach ben ha'alufa. Between the midwife and the mother, the little baby got the poor baby got lost. That's similar to the Gemara in the Sechta Erevin that says "Kededa de beishut v'lo kerida v'lo chamima," which means in Aramaic, it's Aramaic, and it means "Kededa de beishut for a pot that belongs to two people, to partners, is neither hot nor cold," because everybody thinks that, you know, like the other one should do it. In committees, that's the problem with committees. You always have to have somebody who is responsible. If there's more than one person who's responsible, something is not going to be done. The Medrash also says both Yiftach and Pinchas were punished for their share in this tragedy. Yiftach, the last pasuk that we read, said by Yikaver he was buried Ba'orei Gilad, in the cities of Gilad. How is one man buried in the cities of Gilad? Says that he suffered from an illness that limbs of his body simply were severed from him, and wherever they fell, that's where they were buried. So he ended up being buried in the cities of Gilad. Now listen, and Pinchas nistalka mimen ruach hakodesh was removed from him. Yes, sir. The only thing that we are going to learn from here, and Chazal are going to tell us, that this became a lesson for people for all time to watch themselves. No drained darim, people who make vows have to watch themselves for all of history. Now watch. Listen to this medrash, and here it becomes very. This is the point at which the question deepens to the point that we have to start at least attempting to answer it. And let's see. Kivan Shebikesh Litkarva. The Medrash says he wanted to sacrifice her. Haitab Bochelefanav. She cried before him. Do you hear? She cried. Amra Laubito, his daughter, said to him, Avi, Yatzati Litrabcha B'simchai, went out toward you in great joy. Batash Shalcheitoti, and you're going to slaughter me. Shema katav HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'torato sheyi Yisrael makrivu l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu nafshot adam. Did God write in His Torah that He wants
people to sacrifice human beings. Inktiv b'Torah, it doesn't say in the Torah, ki yakriv Adam, when you will bring a man as a sacrifice. Adam ki yakriv karban, a man who will bring a sacrifice, brings a sacrifice from an animal. Why are you going to slaughter me?
Amalah say seta, listen to this conversation. And remember, the conversation means didn't have to necessarily take place this way, but this is the way Chazal see it. They are reconstructing ideas. Amalah, he said to her, Biti, my daughter Nodarti, I made a vow. Vahoya hayotze ashiyetze, whoever is going to come out of my house, I will bring as an ola. Shema kol hanoder yochol hu shalol shalem nidro. Is it possible to say that anybody who's going to make a promise doesn't have to keep his promise? Now, even in what seems to be a confused or a convoluted way of thinking, there is an element of greatness over here. He sees his word as sacrosanct, as holy. He doesn't see this as a mere campaign promise to be forgotten the moment that he wins the battle. He went out here, as you say, under Ruach Hashem, as he prays for a victory from God. He makes a neder. So what's he going to do now that he finally has the victory? Now it's all over. I forget, what's that story about the man who had made a vow, God, I'll give such and such if you save me. And then he decides he's not going to do it, and I don't know, thunder and lightning come down upon him and says, God, wait a minute, wait, I was only kidding, you know, when he sort of left the impression as though he wasn't going to keep his promise. He made a promise, and a serious one, under serious conditions. This was ritzini all the way. Shemo, he turns to his daughter and he says, do you think, therefore, that anybody who makes a vow, you don't have to keep your vow? What do you mean? This was a great deal more important than just a campaign promise. I was speaking to God. Amnalosa, she said to him, but Yaakov also made a vow. As Yaakov is fleeing from the house of his father, fleeing from Esau, and he has that the dream, he sees angels of heaven going up and down a ladder, he says to God, listen, if you will take care of me in the on the road that I travel, and you will bring me back, anything that you give me, I will give a tenth, I will give Misa to you. So she said to her father, God gave him 12 children, did he give two of his children away as sacrifices? She was a smart girl. Kol ha'tvarim ha'elo Amra, the end of the Medrash, all of these other things that she said, the lo shama la. He didn't listen to her. More than that, he didn't hear her. He didn't understand her. What would have been the most natural thing? The most natural thing is that he should hear her. He should, but he doesn't. Maybe, incidentally, if he takes the promise, the neder that he made so seriously, isn't there also in this an indication of the importance that he attaches to himself?
I made a vow. Am I going to simply forget about the vow that I made? But then we have the problem, what happened to everybody else? And maybe before we talk about what happened to everybody else, let's find out what happened to the girl. What did he do? What indeed happened? So you should know that it's a machloket amongst the Mepharshim. According to the Ibn Ezra, the Radak, and the Ralbag, he did not sacrifice her. What he did was, she lived for the rest of her life a monastic kind of existence. The one nun in Jewish history lived, I know she said Tillim, and she lived off alone over there, not so the Ramban. This is a Ramban in Chumash. The Ramban, and this I'd mentioned to you if you have a chance to take a look. You know, maybe I shouldn't have told you, right? It was a very difficult Ramban. The Ramban at the end of Parshat Bechukotai.
The Ramban disagrees with the Ibn Ezra, disagrees with all of those Mefarshim who say that that what he did was just sent her off alone. According to the Ramban, he sacrificed her. He brought her as an Ola. Question is, why did he make such a terrible, terrible mistake? He was one of the Gedolei HaDor. Remember, he was the head of the Sanhedrin. The Ramban says that the clue to an understanding of Parshat Yiftach is a pasuk at the end of Sefer Vayikra. In chapter 27 of Sefer Vayikra, pasuk 29, Kol Chedem Asher Yocharam Min HaAdam Lo Yipadeh, any chedem that will be made by man, Lo Yipadeh, shall not be redeemed, Mot Yumat, one should surely die. Difficult pasuk to understand. What is it referring to? According to Rashi and Chazal, what it refers to is that it can mean a number of things. One of them being that a person who has a death penalty hanging upon himself, lo yipadeh, he cannot redeem it. Can't redeem. You can't ransom yourself from a death penalty. Yiftach learned a different pshat in this pasuk. Yiftach learned that the pshat in this pasuk is a commitment that is made by a leader of Israel is one that can never be negated. Because we do learn from this pasuk also that any commitment that's made by Klal Yisrael as a whole, for example, there are commitments or promises that Klal Yisrael takes upon themselves, and they can only transgress it by paying a horrible price. For example, does it say in the Torah that you can't take anything from the spoil of the city of Yericho? No such thing in Torah. Yehoshua made a chedem that no one is to take anything from the spoil of the city of Yericho. It's holy for all time. Yehoshua also made a klala, a curse upon anybody who's going to rebuild the city of Yericho, that when he lays the foundations of the city, his firstborn son is going to die, and when he puts on the doors, he completes the construction of the city of Yericho, his youngest will die. And later on, in the days of Achav and Eliyahu, a fellow by the name of Yechiel from Beit El built Yericho, and that's precisely what happened. His children died in succession during the course of construction. And what happens with Yehoshua? Yes, so we know that there's one person who took from the spoil of Yericho, and Jews lose a battle at Ai. You know why? Because when a commitment is undertaken by Klal Yisrael, that commitment must be kept. There's a big difference between a commitment undertaken by the community as a whole and a commitment that's undertaken by an individual. A community as a whole, it's Chil Hashem of the highest order that, you know, we're all going to go back on it. You know, let's have one mass Hataras Nitarim, you know, on TV. You can't. A commitment that's accepted and undertaken by a community, a Klal Yisrael community, becomes holy and you have to do it. And therefore, though it doesn't say in Torah that you're not permitted to take from the spoil of Yericho, you couldn't take it because that was what we had decided. Yiftach's mistake is, Yiftach assumes that this applies not only to a commitment that is undertaken by Klal Yisrael, but a commitment that's undertaken by the leader of Israel has the same thrust and the same power as that which is undertaken by all of Israel. And therefore, there's no way out of it. It's not just a promise that Reuven makes to Shimon or Sara to Rachel. This is a leader of Klal Yisrael that is making a commitment to God. That's what the Medrash said over there. Yochel, is it possible that anybody's going to make a neder can go back on his neder? Says the Ramban, v'zeh hayat ta'uto shel Yiftach v'bito. That was the mistake that Yiftach made with his daughter. Ki chasham, because he thought that when a vow of chedem is going to be made
by Negid Yisrael, the Prince of Israel, Chal V'Kayam, that neder becomes sacrosanct, it becomes holy. Even Lahamit Anashim, even if it means to kill people. Oh, Ha'over Al Chermo, or somebody who is going to transgress the commitment. What did they do to Achan? Achan was put to death because he had transgressed not a mitzvah in the Torah, but a commitment that had been undertaken by Klal Yisrael. His terrible mistake was that this is only true when Klal Yisrael makes a commitment, and it's only true in order to bring about the destruction of the enemies of Israel or those who rebel. It did not apply in this case. But he read the pasuk of Kol Chedem Asher Yacharam Min HaAdam. Any kind of commitment that's going to be made by the special man, the one who's the leader of Israel, that commitment has to be kept. On the one hand, this is extreme piety. What is it that has motivated this extreme piety? It has been motivated by an exaggerated sense of his own greatness and his own importance. All right, so we know, let's assume we know now, on some level, according to the Ramban, we know the mistake that was made. The mistake that was made by the Yiftach. Okay? But that doesn't answer another problem. What that doesn't answer is the blindness that descends upon all of Israel. Isn't there somebody who can walk over to him and tell him, Yiftach, that's not the pshat from the pasuk. Yiftach, you're a great man, but the commitment that you make is not a commitment that you have to keep. Furthermore, Yiftach, the commitment that you, if you want to make a commitment, if you want to make a promise or a vow, you can make any vow you want, but you cannot therefore make a vow about somebody else. Can I make a vow that all of your money should be a kodesh? Can I make a vow that you should be brought as a sacrifice? You can't do this. Listen to a medrash. This is a medrash Tanchuma. A great deal of the medrashim, many of them are the Tanchuma in Parshat Chukotai. Medrash says like this. This is the continuation of the medrash. You remember we read earlier the medrash of the daughter speaking to her father and saying, Tate Tayaka, what are you doing? What are you doing? Does God want human sacrifice? Did Yaakov give two of his children because he said that he's going to give Miser? What was the end of that medrash? She was crying, and v'lo shama lo, he didn't listen to her. Says the medrash, kim sherato shelo shama lo, when she saw that he's not listening to her, amra lo, the daughter said, this is the continuation of that conversation. Hanicheni, leave me be, give me a chance, ve'ereid eitzel beddin, I will go to beddin. Let me go ask Yishayla. Shema yimtzu petach linidarecha, maybe they will find an opening, a way that we should be able to undo your vow. Shenema, how do we know that she said this thing? Because Pasuk we learned, how to pay me many, leave me be, shnayim chadoshim for 2 months, ve'ilcha, and I will go, v'yaradati al heharim, I will go down upon the mountains. As the medrash, does a person go down upon the mountains, or does a person go up the mountain? V'yaradati al heharim, what does it mean, I will go down upon the mountains? Amar Rav Zechariah, Rav Zechariah said, v'chiyesh adam yogeid al heharim, people don't go down two mountains, they go up two mountains. What was she saying to him? Elu Sanhedrin, the mountains of Israel, the great heights of Israel, that's the Sanhedrin. She wants to go to the Sanhedrin to ask a shayla. Holcho etzvam, she went to them, v'lo matzu petach liyiftach. This is the most difficult part of it all. She comes before the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin don't find a way of freeing Yiftach from his vow. If Yiftach is blinded, I can understand it, but we're talking about the entire Sanhedrin. And nobody,
I mean, this already seems to be not a natural kind of blindness. There is a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God Himself is mastir. He's concealed the truth from them all. It's a terrible tragedy. Why?
Says the Medrash, Bavon Otam Sheshachat Mishevet Ephraim. The story of his daughter and what he does to his daughter comes really after what happens with Ephraim 42,000. That's when the battle really ends. After 42,000 of Shevet Ephraim die, that's really when he comes home. What the Navi had done was told us the story of the Neder, tells us the end of the story, and then chapter 12, the first six psukim of chapter 12 are a flashback, taking us back to the field of battle. While still in the middle of the war, Ephraim comes and complains because of the sin that 42,000 fell of Ephraim. And I would say it's a sin that in some way he was responsible for the first civil war where Jews lifted up hand against Jew to kill one another. And you know what the Medrash means to tell us? That's the only way we can understand a darkness of this sort descending, that not a single member of the Sanhedrin is able to say, listen, you don't have to keep the vow. V'olav u'omer, and about this it says, Gever Rosh V'oshe Dalim, a poor person, and one who steals from the poor, Matar Selchef. The rain comes and sweeps him away, Ve'ein Lechem, and there is no bread. Says the Medrash, it means like this, Gever Rosh V'oshek Dalim, a poor person and one who steals from the poor. Ze Yiftach. This is referring to Yiftach. Shehaya Rosh B'Torah, he was poor in Torah. And Oshek Et HaDalim. You know what he did? He also stole from the poor. The Oshek Dalim means, Oshek Dalim, is that he has to carry guilt and responsibility for those poor people from Ephraim who fled from the field of battle and were slaughtered by the bridges of the Yarden. Say Yiftach, by your Shochtan, he slaughtered them. And therefore, Matar Sochef, it's like water, rain that comes sweeping down Ve'in Lechem. Listen to the words of the Medrash. Shehoyolo Mishi Yatilo Es Nidro. There should have been somebody who could have been Mater the Neder. Somebody who could have freed him of his vow. Ela Ein Lechem, there was no bread. No bread meaning no Torah. Listen to the words of the Medrash. She'elim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mehem Et HaHalacha. God concealed the Halacha from them. She'lo Yimtzu Petach LaHatir Lo Et Nidro. So they should not find any way to free him from his vow. Olav Shachta. So he went and he slaughtered her. He lost his only daughter because he was directly or indirectly guilty of the loss of 42,000 Jewish lives. That's the problem. Yes?
What was the daughter guilty of? She was the one who
was guilty. What was she guilty of? Good. So number one, I made a statement earlier and I'm going to make it more clearly now. I think that even when we have finished everything that we have to say on this parasha, and we're nearly there, doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to walk away from this parasha with a feeling, oh, I understand it. I understand it. It's clear to me. Now I realize what it was all about. I don't think that there's any explanation that's really going to make us feel good about it. There was a tragedy here. There were mistakes here. We can attempt in some way to see through the eyes of our rabbis what it was that brought about a tragedy of this sort. What brought it about? And yet, so I can make an argument, whatever you want. I can make the argument, yes, the innocent suffer. You ask, his daughter is innocent? I ask, 42,000 people of Ephraim. They left 42,000 almanas and tens of thousands of Yisraelim. They're also innocent. Now, I can make any argument that you want. It's clear that there were flaws here, there were mistakes here, and the Medrash tells us the words that God concealed the halakha. Otherwise, how are we to understand all of Klal Yisrael with Rabbonim and Gedolim and Sanhedrin coming to Chachamim? None of them know the halakha. A darkness descends. Do you know when darkness descends upon the Jewish people? A Jew can raise up hand against Jew and slaughter 42,000 fellow Jews. Ein lecha darkness gadol misu. Chapter 28, Pasuk Gimel. Really, what you have to do is take the Medrash Tanchuma in Parashat Bechukotai, and a lot of the Medrashim out there, the Medrash Rabbah. Yes.
Listen, your God's accountant? Your God's accountant? So what, maybe his wife couldn't have a child after that? I don't understand. Binyamin's wife had 10 children, and Rachel couldn't have a child. How many did Sarah have? I mean, you become the one that has to check why the population is not growing. The population grows just when you want it to grow. What happens to people who want the population to grow and is gatekeepers? You know, they're advised as gatekeepers. A woman has one child and then never, she can't get pregnant again. What do you think, this was by choice that you have to have one child? It seems they only had one wife. That already we've discussed a number of times in the past. I'm not going to go over that again. The rule was one wife, not more than one wife. So, you know, I think I mentioned it in the previous show, maybe even yesterday. So, I mentioned it yesterday. I remember what? At the end of the Chumash year, I said, and then yesterday was the day of elections, I said, after all said and done, when you take a look at the world at large, you have to say, Mi ka'amcha Yisrael, who is like your people, Israel, a country with such problems, our problems reside in the rest of the world. We know already about 90% of the world. Only the latest is Sarajevo and Bosnia and Herzegovina. What's going on over there? I can't figure out who the Serbs are, who the Croats are, and that's only the latest example. There must be 30 countries in the world with a civil war going on right now. And all the countries in the world, there maybe are 10% or less that have real democratic elections. A country like this, with all of the divisions to the point of hatred, is able to go on a beautiful, sunny June morning and vote democratically is an example of greatness for a whole world. And I say it means even more to me when I go through make a study of Tanakh, or you read the history of Bayit Sheni. There were times that Jews absolutely killed one another. And with all of our hatreds now, right, left, religious, non-religious, so the worst that happens really is that it'll take a week to clean the streets of Eretz Yisrael from all of the olive bases, gimels, and filters together the streets. But here we are talking about periods of time where Jews killed one another. It staggers me. I can't understand it. You're asking a good question. I don't know why. What was it? Why were they just... What justification did Ephraim have to come and say, you didn't call me? Yes, and he won a victory. Come give him a yashakaya. No, Ephraim. And it's the second time that they do it. I could, on some level, explain it. And it relates to something that we said some months ago. It comes to mind now. 30 years before the exodus of Egypt, it was the tribe of Ephraim that broke out of Mitzrayim. They had had it. They were not going to be enslaved. They were pursued by the Egyptians. I mean, in other words, they rebelled. And out they went. They were pursued by the Egyptians, and they were slaughtered. And that's Mitzrayim. Remember, I think we mentioned, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that Ephraim, more than all of the others, was incapable of taking the enslavement in Egypt. First of all, Ephraim was born in Egypt. He was a full-fledged, blue-blooded
Egyptian. From as much Egyptian as anybody else. More than that, Ephraim's tata was Yosef, the man who saved this entire empire. And my father contributed more than anybody else to the greatness of Egypt.
But Jacob Kaminsky added also that Ephraim had an Egyptian name. And if you go through Tanakh, you will find Egyptian names usually have a pay and a resh, or a pay and a resh. And something that's like an aleph or an ayin. Paro, Shifra, Pua, Sofnas, Paaneach, Poti, Feda. So here's Ephraim, born in Egypt, with an Egyptian name, that he should be enslaved as a stranger and a foreigner was something that he couldn't take. And therefore they had this burning desire for freedom to throw off the yoke, and therefore they made the abortive attempt to get out, and it brought destruction upon them. In a sense, it would seem that within the character and the personality of Ephraim, there is this pride. There is a certain sense of superiority. Right, maybe also the younger who is younger brother is his older brother is overlooked. These are not things that can explain in a satisfying way the problems that we have over here. But there certainly was something in the nature of a Ephraim that made him contentious and cantankerous, and what it caused was terrible, terrible tragedy. But who? So their tragedy was that 42,000 died. But because Yiftach, as a leader, was not able to avoid this horrible tragedy, he paid for it as well. I tell you, there's something else here. On a certain level, I can understand better the pshat that said that he indeed brought her as a sacrifice. Because, now, if he brings her as a sacrifice, it's all right, he's committed, let's call it a terrible crime, but like it's over and done with, there's nothing that can be done about it. If say she's going to be 50 years alone, so the darkness, like it only still has to continue for 50 years, that would have troubled me. In other words, yeah, so he sent her off as a nun someplace in the mountains. And 4 days every year, the girls would go out, the women would go out and cry for her. Or cry with her, or cry for her. If you say cry for her, and what it means is that the mistake that was made was a mistake of one moment. He killed her. I would even say one step further. Even in the event that the blindness is removed and they see the terrible mistake that was made, there's nothing that they will do to Yiftach anymore. Simple. Yiftach remains as a shofi for 6 years. And if he's buried in the cities of Gilad, I'm ready to contend that he became deathly ill immediately afterwards, and for 6 years I'm gefallen von dem Sticker until he died. Which means that even if they would have already it would have occurred to them, none of the tragedy has taken place. The man is not one who has sacrificed somebody. He's a killer, Yiftach.
But to say that she went off alone onto the mountains, and there she remained for the rest of her natural life, and during all of those years, nobody woke up to see that a terrible mistake had been made, that would have been terrible. All right, let's say that we'll close with one more medrash. Shema Tomah, El Tanah Ba'im U'Shnayim, out of those 42,000, Shenerek U'Bimei Yiftach HaGiladi, that were killed in the days of Yiftach. We want to know why this tragedy. But Neiman Nehru, why were the 42,000 killed? What happened over there?
Says the Medrash, Yiftach HaGiladi Nada Neda Shalom Kahogen. La'alot b'torat Rabbi HaMizbeach Yiftach HaGelavi had made a vow which was incorrect. Wrong. Bring his daughter onto the Mizbeach.
Listen to this. I mean, this is a...
Medesh tells us, do you know why the people of Ephraim gathered against Yiftach? When they heard about the Neda, that he wants to bring his daughter as a sacrifice, the people of Ephraim gathered against him, Lasot Imo Meriva Gedola. They wanted to wage war with him. How are you going to do this? From the Medrash also, it seems, remember when we learned the last few Pesukim of Yiftach in chapter 12, the people of Ephraim looked down upon the people of Gilad. According to the Medrash, it seems, you know why they looked down upon the people of Gilad? Because of this foolish vow that was made, and a man who either plans on carrying it out or has already done it. But the question really is going to be whether the last few Pesukim, those Pesukim in chapter 12, are a flashback, or does everything follow in chronological order? Maybe it was because he already did what he said he would do to his daughter that the people of Ephraim gathered against him. This is a leader of Klal Yisrael. Now, if you're going to read it in its chronological order, and that's what this Medrash holds, they gathered against him, that means that the Bnei Ephraim are gathering because they have a just cause. A man took a Jewish girl and either has already brought her as a sacrifice or plans on bringing her. Pinchas should have said to Ephraim, "La'atet nidra nidra yiftach lo batim." You didn't come to free him from his vow. El la'asotim lo neriva batim. You came in a way through with him. If you really care, you know what you should do? Make sure that he frees himself of his vow. El lo daishu lo micha b'nei Ephraim. The Medrash says, not enough that Pinchas did not stop Ephraim from waging war, he did not free Yiftach of his vow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar, said God, V'yachas she'som zeh nafsho v'kapo bo l'hatzel et Yisrael mi'ad b'nei Amon v'hein bo l'asot imo m'rubo g'dola v'yitkatzu alav l'asot yukhom imo. God says, this man was the instrument of a great victory. This man brought peace to Klal Yisrael. And they come now, Ephraim comes out to wage war with him. Miyad Yosef Yiftach Vahorat Ben Arpoim Yishnaim Olah. Yiftach went out and killed 42,000. Everybody was wrong here. Everybody made a mistake. What we're talking about is tragedies, errors, and mistakes that are compounded, and everybody loses by it. Ephraim comes out to wage war because of the mistake that was made by Yiftach. Pinchas should have stopped them all, and he didn't. So Yiftach has made a mistake, the people of Ephraim have made a mistake. Pinchas has made a mistake, and God is the one whose complaint is against Ephraim. Ephraim, you're coming. This is what the Medrash says. God is angry with Ephraim. You're coming to wage war with the man who has brought such great victory to Klal Yisrael. This man is the instrument of Nitzachon. He saved Klal Yisrael. Him you're going to wage war against? That's not to go about the way to go about it. The Medrash concludes by saying, "Mi haraget kol ela." Who killed all of these people? Look at all the people who died over there. Who killed all of these people? Have they all met? Lo horak al pana was Pinchas. The one who killed him was Pinchas. Shahar Yosipik, the other linko, he had the opportunity. He could have objected the lo micha, and he didn't object. The gamahoyelo lahatidet nidro yiftach lo hitter. He should have freed Yiftach from his vow. I will, just one more minute. Just as I say it now, it occurs to me something that I said in shul last Shabbos that fits into this very, very well. Extremely difficult thing. The Gemara says that there was a fellow named Rabbi Zechariah ben Afkilus. Zechariah ben Afkilus was there Remember the story in the Sefer Gittin? Why was the second Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. This fellow Kamsa had... there was a person who had a friend, Kamsa, and an enemy, Bar Kamsa. And then he made a party. He wanted to invite Kamsa. By mistake, Bar Kamsa was invited. Bar Kamsa came. He threw him out. Bar Kamsa became very angry. Went to Rome, told Rome that the Jews have rebelled. The king wanted... Rome wants to test if Israel has rebelled. They send an animal as a sacrifice to Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa makes a blemish in the animal, and then he brings it to the Beit HaMikdash, and the question now comes, should this animal be brought or not? So the rabbis wanted to bring the carbon, because otherwise, you know, all of the time, so it would be invented. So Rav Zecharia ben Achilles was there, and he said, what are you talking about? People are going to say that you can bring an animal with a blemish upon the altar in the Beit HaMikdash? Can't do that. So they said, listen, let's kill Bar Kamsa so you shouldn't be able to... Let's assassinate him so you shouldn't be able to go back and tell Rome that Jews have rebelled against Rome. So Rav Zecharia ben Achilles said, listen, what are you talking about? So people will make a mistake and think that somebody who makes a blemish in an animal that's holy for the Mizbeach gets the death penalty, you can't do it. Amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan says, An v'netanu tosho Rav Zecharia ben Achilles, the humility of Rav Zecharia ben Achilles, Hechaliba Dotenu destroyed our Beit HaMikdash, so far Hechalenu caused the fire that consumed it, Vehiglitanu Levein Umat HaOlam, and caused us to go into exile. But Zecharia ben Achilles is blamed. So what I said last Shabbos was that Rav Zecharia ben Achilles' problem was that he was unable to make a decision. A leader has to be able to make a decision. And what option did he leave them with? Whatever option they raised for he said, you can't do it. You can't sacrifice the animal. You can't kill Bar Kamsa. So what can you do? What can you do? Not all the time are choices available to us that all of them are good. There are times at which you have to choose the lesser of two evils. You have to do something. You have to make a choice. A person who cannot make a choice brings destruction upon Christ. So you have to be able to make a decision. You have to be able to make a decision who to vote for. You can't just go into the coffee over there and then take a look at the, you know, eeny, meeny, olive bays, gimel, dalet, hay, buzz, right? You have to make a decision. For better or for worse, make a decision. Sometimes it's for better and sometimes it's for worse. But there's a medrash. The medrash says that Rav Zecharia ben Achilles was sitting at the party. With our conscience thrown out of the party. And he could have objected, but he remained silent. It may also be that he remained silent because he wasn't sure what to do. I don't know. If I'll get up and object, so Mrs. whoever is making the party is going to get upset. I'm going to make that the whole party is going to turn into a pot. People are going to start throwing pickles at each other. And we shall be cool. It's going to be terrible. I can't do that. And later I'll go over to the fellow and tell him, listen, you did a terrible thing. You shouldn't have thrown out by council. Go ask him to kill. He didn't make a decision. He didn't object. HaKadosh Baruch Hu medakdek im tzadikah kichut hasara. There is, from leaders of Klal Yisrael, we expect a completely different standard of conduct. And you have to know that the buck stops by the leader of Klal Yisrael. And if he could have objected and he didn't object, then he is held guilty. Pinchas could have objected and didn't object. And therefore a tragedy befalls Klal Yisrael, civil war. Extremely, extremely important lesson. Does it make the whole parasha much easier to understand? I would say no. It's still a perek that you go away with an extremely heavy heart, with all sorts of difficulties and questions. The important thing is that we learn a lesson from it. That's the important thing. And the important thing is that we have to be able to see things without being blinded by pride or an over-exaggerated sense of our own importance. Yes? So now, Sandy, therefore holds that since I have strong opinions about what should be done during the course of the coming weeks, she wants me to make sure that I'm getting on to the phone, I'm going to make calls, I'm going to speak to the heads of all the religious parties and tell them, listen, we want you all to get together and that you should negotiate as a block from Sandy's mouth to
hammer's ear, and write the letter to the Jews above Pharaoh. She's right.
Now they're both against me.
You should have objected.